with SBS Radio.
Matthew, welcome to NITV Radio once again.
Thank you very much, Bertrand. It's a pleasure to be here. I'd just like to take this moment as well, acknowledge the traditional owners of the land in which we're here today. We're at the wonderful SBS studio, Federation Square, and the traditional owners being the Bunurong and Warrawong people of the Kulin Nation. I want to pay respect to the elders, both past, present and future.
Very good. Welcome to the program. And I have to remind our listeners that your principal lawyer at AMK Law, the biggest, I would say 100% owned and 100% Aboriginal law firm based in Melbourne.
Definitely not the biggest law firm, but very proud to be 100% Aboriginal owned law firm. That's right.
Hence the very powerful introduction, which many of my guests don't do actually, and very respectful to our leaders, past and present and future. Now, coming out of the Indigenous Business Month was last month. One thing I noticed while covering this month, there are some Indigenous businesses that just exist almost, or just thrive on IPPs, Indigenous Procurement Policy. One particular business I covered, I'm not going to name it because we're just talking legally and business-wise on general terms and not just pointing to anyone in particular, is a business that actually is massive, makes millions of dollars, but most of its business comes from the IPPs, government contracts, and other related contracts. Now, what's your take on this in a legal perspective?
Sure. So I think overall the Indigenous procurement policy is a fantastic policy with excellent intent in terms of the reconciliation as well as the future opportunity for Indigenous businesses and the Indigenous community as well as the community overall. The IPP was set out in July 2015, and I remember that time very well because we'd sort of, you know, been a year into our own law firm business, and I felt very pleased to hear that there's such support for Aboriginal businesses. And there's also been fantastic growth. Last week we went to a Kinaway event that was in the St Kilda Town Hall, and seeing, and Kinaway is an organisation that's run through the Victorian Chamber of Commerce for Indigenous businesses. So the event was fantastic in terms of bringing Indigenous businesses together, and we've got such a strong relationship amongst ourselves as business owners and as businesses, and the support for one another is fantastic, which was shown even more so last week at the event. Now, the policy itself has three main parts. The first part is there's a specific number of contracts that are to be awarded to Indigenous businesses by the specific portfolios under the Commonwealth policy. There's also a mandatory amount that is set aside for the remote contracts and certain contracts that are between $80,000 to $200,000. And the third main part of the policy is that there's a minimum Indigenous participation requirement in particular industries. So there's a requirement to have a specific percentage of Indigenous participation for particular industries, which I think is a fantastic step forwards overall when they're even looking to increase the amounts under the policy, which is fantastic. One of the things I really want to speak about today is in the context of the IPP, the notion of a joint venture, because there's a lot of Indigenous businesses who can see the opportunity but don't actually have the resources to really step forwards into those opportunities. One of the things that Indigenous businesses are very strongly encouraged to do is to apply for tenders. And a lot of tender contracts, they'll have a condition in the contract perhaps, or it might be a criteria that's looked at when assessing the tender documentation. The criteria being whether or not the business is an Indigenous business. So that leads to great opportunity. But the Indigenous business needs to be able to fulfill the mandate, fulfill the requirement, fulfill the scope of work of the tender. And really, it's in the best interest of both the Indigenous business as well as for that government department that's putting out the tender to ensure that the Indigenous business can actually fulfill the scope of works. Otherwise, it's just trouble for both sides.
Yeah, it would be unwise to just offer it because of the it's an Indigenous business. You just give it to them if they don't have the technical know-how or the capacity to be able to deliver on that particular contract.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the figure 70,000, 80,000. Is it a minimum? What does it relate to? Is it the turnover of the business has to turn over that amount, or is it the amount of the contract? It will be a contract for a business that's between $70,000 to $80,000. You must have an Indigenous component in it. Or can you elaborate a little bit more on that one particular one?
Yep, the mandatory set aside is where, for contracts valued between $80,000 and $200,000, the government agencies need to first check and see whether there's an Indigenous business that can deliver the goods or services on a value for money basis before actually approaching the market. So if there is an Indigenous business that can actually provide the goods or services on that value for money basis, it can mean that the Indigenous business gets that priority, and it doesn't actually end up being a tender process. The Indigenous business gets the opportunity on that value for money basis.
The other one is about joint ventures. What's a joint venture, and what's the minimum requirement to go into a joint venture in the context of IPPs?
Exactly, and terrific question, Bertrand. Being a lawyer, I have a bit of a hang-up about the word of joint venture in the context of the IPP. The main reason for that is because the definition of joint venture under the IPP is actually different to the legal definition of joint venture. Generally, when people are talking about a joint venture in the context of the IPP, it's essentially having two businesses, getting an Indigenous business together with a non-Indigenous business. For example, it's often played out that non-Indigenous business is a larger company, and they come together forming a business structure, which is usually a corporate entity, a company, with a shareholders agreement set out in place. And then the business is conducted by both of those businesses together for, you know, the commercial venture on an ongoing basis in most instances. The supply nation definition, I think, has been accepted and understood well by most Indigenous businesses, and most Indigenous businesses look very fondly on joint venture arrangements. But there's been some issues. One of the issues has been to do with black cladding. Essentially, black cladding is where the Indigenous business takes on a sort of like a token type arrangement. Instead of being given a true opportunity to display the strength of the Indigenous ownership, there's a token symbolism aspect that's given to the Indigenous business, and it's really not good for anyone having black cladding take place. So I think one of the best things in this for Indigenous business owners, as well as for the other entity that goes into the joint venture, to keep in mind is making sure that the strength of both parties is put out on the table when forming the arrangement, and having the arrangement entered into on a win-win basis, because Indigenous people, Indigenous businesses have a lot that can be contributed into business, into the economy, into the community. And I think we can all receive that benefit best by allowing the strength of the Indigenous business to really shine through.
Yeah, black cladding is a term that I've never heard before, but I'm going to actually memorize it because it's very appropriate. It's just like a facade, a token kind of, a tokenistic kind of business venture, I believe, just to give it, an Indigenous credential, which it might not have. That's my understanding of the black cladding.
Yes, and often the purpose is to take advantage of the benefits that are set out.
Like the IPPs, if they need to fulfill the Indigenous component of the tender, then you just find an Indigenous part. I can relate to this very, very particularly. I remember back in my youth, there was a business model that was being peddled around, and some people would just pick up a celebrity's name and just launch whatever perfume or any brand, and then you just put a celebrity name, and there you are. So that in that particular case, you just stolen the name.
Yes.
And people buy, believing they're buying into the cachet of this celebrity, which is not a celebrity, just a, yeah. And in the case of joint ventures would be, well, let's say have a small cleaning business and a big corporation wants to get into a joint venture. And then they might come to me and say, okay, yeah, you know, we need your model to be able to win the contract. We need your name on it. And then they get the contract, and then at the end, I don't get any business out of it.
That's right. And the other thing that happens is the Indigenous business doesn't build its capacity. There's so many advantages through being a business owner, and there's a lot of growth, contribution, role model setting. There's so many benefits even beyond those points I've just mentioned that come through operating a successful business.
Yeah.
And where black cladding occurs, it's robbing really everyone from those opportunities. It robs the Indigenous business, the Indigenous business owner community, but also the Australian community overall, because if the Indigenous business isn't able to, you know, play the game full out by producing great value for money services and products, then the community doesn't receive the benefits of those goods and services either.
It's
really frowned upon, but I think these days there's starting to be a lot more of a positive intent, and there's a lot more Australian companies that are looking positively, and there's a stronger relationship basis that's being developed amongst the joint venture arrangements.
Yeah, and you can help people going into these kind of ventures not fall into the pitfall of this black cladding phenomenon?
Absolutely. I think one of the key priorities is to ensure that there's proper legal advice and understanding about how the relationship needs to work. What are the rights and obligations of the Indigenous business? What are the rights and obligations of, you know, the joint venture partner? And at AMK Law, we've advised many clients and done the legal work in setting up these arrangements where it really does benefit the Indigenous business.
Yeah. Take away a message before I let you go, just as usual, closing word?
A great message, I believe, is to enjoy the journey and the process of every single day and learn the lessons and appreciate learning the lessons that come with that.
Thank you so much, Matthew.
Tell us what you think. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter.